Hello everyone and welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast for the first for 2017. We've had a short break. There's been a little bit of cricket to report on and there'll be a little bit of cricket coming up. And to join me to discuss those events is Andrew Dixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, I guess we'll start with the Desert T20, which is a fairly substantial tournament that the UAE hosted at the beginning of the year. There are 8 teams involved, and it was, as you'd expect for the top 8 T20 teams, it was pretty closely contested. Start with Group A, because Ireland and Afghanistan were in this group, along with the UAE and Namibia, and Afghanistan had a fantastic week all around. They pretty much dominated this group, starting with the first game against Ireland, which they won by 5 wickets.
Afghanistan, I think, showed themselves to be by far the strongest associate in 2020 cricket. Obviously, 2015 was a bit of a blip in the qualifier back then, and they've come back and gone on to win this tournament. That opening game against Ireland, I think, Ireland scored 125 for 6. That's not really enough in 2020 these days, especially against a team that can bat like Afghanistan can. Afghanistan didn't really have had very little trouble chasing that target. Jacob Mulder bowled well for Ireland in the match, taking 2 wickets, and I think he finished the tournament as a leading wicket taker. But aside from that, there wasn't really much to talk about for Ireland in that game. Pretty poor all around.
Yeah, they came back. Afghanistan dominated the other 2 matches that they played. They won them by 5 wickets over the UAE, which was a reasonably close game. The UAE had a pretty good tournament. Although they didn't make the finals, beat Namibia pretty comfortably by 64 runs. But Ireland, they beat the UAE by 24 runs, and they also beat Namibia by 5 wickets. So that was a relatively close match, finishing with a couple of balls to spare. But at least they seem to have turned around their T20 fortunes a little bit.
So far. But a lot of the teams involved in this tournament haven't played all that much recently. So whether there's a sort of form element in there, I think everybody was going in a little bit dark, apart from maybe Afghanistan. So whether we can read too much into what the other teams did, I'm not too sure. Ireland, I think there's still a lot to go. I think William Porterfield, I don't think he's doing well in 2020 cricket, and I think he could probably do with skipping 2020 cricket from now on. He only scored 28 runs in 4 matches in the tournament, which isn't what you want from your captain, really.
No, and he was a player who used to start at the top and solidifying influence against the other players who are doing well. But if he's not scoring runs, he's not a solidifying influence either, and he's not scoring fast enough to just play cameos.
No, you're absolutely right. He's not a quick run scorer as it is, and in 2020 you need those quick run scorers, or you need someone who's going to hold down an end and rotate the strike to enable the quick run scorers to get on strike, and he's not doing either of those jobs. So whether he's quite the best fit for Ireland's T20 side going forward, I think is open to question at the moment.
In Group B, Scotland won all 3 of their matches. Not entirely comfortably. There's only 7 runs against the Netherlands, although they beat Oman by 7 wickets and Hong Kong by 24 runs. The other 3 won 1 each, with Oman being the best of those 3 getting through, which is possibly not a surprise too much in those conditions, but again, another sign that Oman's backing up the forms that they produced 2 years ago and last year.
They continue to show that their 2015 and 2016 was no fluke, and obviously, when they got to the semi-final, they got rolled over by Afghanistan quite convincingly after Mohammad Shahzad scored 80 from 60 balls. But a very good performance, I think, for Oman. They certainly haven't disgraced themselves. And I think they're certainly a team to watch. But I think there's always that question about, what's the next generation of players like for Oman?
Yeah, the match against Afghanistan, they put on a pretty decent total. And so And they're probably the closest team to Afghanistan potentially in the tournament, despite losing by 8 wickets. The Ireland-Scotland match was a bit of a surprise, though. You, given how Scotland was playing and Ireland's recent struggles, you'd have thought this would be very close. But Ireland put on 211 in the first innings, and Scotland just never really got close to that, which is not surprising, I guess, when you're chasing a super high total.
No, you know, 211 for six is a very good total for Ireland in 2020 cricket. They don't often approach 200. They sometimes struggle to score 150. And then they bowled very well as well. Jacob Mulder again in the wickets, taking 4 for 16. And yeah, Scotland just, you know, after their form in the first round, you would have expected Scotland to put up more of a fight. But as you say, it's always difficult to chase that sort of target. They started well. The opening partnership put on 45. Cross scored 35 from 16. Curtis 40 from 31. But after that, there was only two more batsmen scoring double figures, and they just sort of collapsed, really.
Talk about the final in a sec, but the mentioned Hong Kong and the Netherlands, both very inconsistent sides, particularly Hong Kong, whose top score is 183 and their lowest scores are 87. They're very hit and miss still.
Yeah, I think we might have described them on this podcast before as a sort of Pakistan of associate cricket. They're either, maddeningly brilliant or infuriatingly, inconsistent. And I think that this tournament sort of summed up that, and they need to get that consistency, I think, going forward.
And to some extent, the same with the Netherlands. The lower score, 92 against Hong Kong, but other scores in the 140s, but only the one win.
Yeah, that win came against Oman, the eventual semi-finalists. But again, Netherlands haven't been playing much recently, as Peter Boren will often point out. So, when you're not having that experience, it's hard to sort of get yourself up for these tournaments. And, and there's not much planned for the Netherlands for the rest of the year either, apart from the Intercontinental Cup and World Cricket League Championship matches that have been long scheduled. So, it's a question, where do the Netherlands go from here? If they're not going to get that playing experience, then they're always going to struggle in these sort of situations.
Yeah, a lot will depend on whether there's a World T20 coming up and whether that happens, because that will make a huge difference to the amount of cricket that they have to look forward to. The final, it's different opposition, I guess. But Ireland followed up their 211 with a 71 against Afghanistan, who was, needless to say, chased down very quickly. Mohammad Shahzad scoring 52, and no wickets were lost. I think the retiring Nawaz Mengel was there as well. Afghanistan really look really good at the moment, don't they?
They certainly do. I think Ireland didn't help by having to play two games back-to-back, which in Dubai is quite challenging given the climate there. And yeah, they just got rolled over. There's no easy way to put it. And just knock off the runs that quickly against a team that had been playing well up until then. Afghanistan a really dangerous side in 2020 cricket, and you would bet on them against, I think, a lot of full members when they're in this sort of form.
And so that's the end of that tournament. It pretty roaring success by most counts. A lot of the teams and players indicating that they'd like it to happen again, which is probably an obvious thing to say given how much cricket they're playing.
Yeah, and why not? I think this was a great tournament. It was done, very quickly. I think you could perhaps have done with maybe an extra rest day for the players and not have the final on the same day as the semi-finals. Maybe have semi-finals are one day and then a final and a third place playoff on another day. So I think there's ways you can just ease the burden on some of those players. We're still dealing with. Obviously some of the teams are professional, but some of them are semi-professional and even amateur as well. So I think there's a little bit of wiggle room with the scheduling of the tournament. The future, maybe you can, there's talk about whether you can invite Zimbabwe and Bangladesh or maybe the A sides of some other full members. I'm not sure. I think I quite like the idea of keeping it as an all associate tournament. I think it's something to put in the shop window. It's unfortunate that the games weren't live streamed. It turned out that The ICC's broadcasting contract gives Star Sports the rights to any tournament involving, I think, five or more ICC members, which is a little odd, which is a little unfortunate because it prevents these events from being broadcast. And because obviously Star Sports, I think, were busy covering the India-England series, they didn't have any desire to broadcast this. So that meant that nobody could broadcast it, which seems a little unfair. I think, perhaps a deal could have been done that could have seen this at least live streamed. It's not a case that, in the past when there's only one channel that's showing cricket in countries, you've got multiple channels now, and this could have been shown, and people would have watched it.
It's also slightly odd. I'm not sure who the organiser was, but I was actually thinking it wasn't the ICC, and therefore it's a bit odd to claim the television rights of a tournament that's not been organised by the person you've made the contract with.
It was organised by the Emirates Cricket Board, as far as I'm aware. Obviously, the ICC broadcasting contract is an odd beast. There's lots of rumours about what it does and doesn't say, whether it does actually say that the World Cup only has to have 10 teams, or whether India have to play 9 games, and some of which are apparently false, some of which may be true, and it seems unfortunate that you would put an obstacle like that in the way of the game's development and getting these teams out there and publicising them. The ICC want cricket to be the world's most popular sport. Well, if you're preventing people from watching an exciting tournament like this in developing markets, how are you going to do that?
Final note is just to note that Rashid Khan continues to be put himself forward as potentially a really, really good player. Economy rate of 3.6 and an average of 6.5 in this tournament.
Yeah, he is. He is definitely the real deal. Really looking forward to seeing what he does down the line, and long may it continue. It's a shame he can't get the chance to maybe play county cricket. Your associates can't play as overseas players in county cricket, but if he can maybe get a 2020 contract somewhere, whether that's the IPL or the Big Bash League or the Caribbean Premier League, that would be great. And I think any team would want playing for them at the moment, because he is a great player in all forms of the game. He's not just a 2020 player. He can play as well in one day cricket, and he's obviously played very well in his first class debut earlier this year.
Moving on, this tournament was followed up by a short little tri series, but it was good to see that they managed to get a few matches in while they were over there, and for Hong Kong and Scotland and the UAE. And UAE, I think we mentioned in our review of last year that they turned the corner a bit, and they seem to have done so again, obviously at home, but winning two of the matches that they played here, with Hong Kong beating Scotland in the other.
Yeah, low scoring matches. Chased about 170 odd in both games. Delighted to see the UAE start to turn a corner. Scotland, I think, would have been disappointed with their performance in this after doing so well in that Desert T20, obviously losing to Hong Kong by 7 wickets and then to the UAE by 4 wickets. They would have been very disappointed with that.
The only other piece of cricket that's been played recently, Andrew, is the ICC America's team that was selected to play in the West Indies has gone over there and it has begun that tournament. There's a interesting bit of news before the start that Stephen Taylor, who had been picked for that side, was instead picked in the Jamaica side and therefore was replaced from the ICC America side?
Yeah, I think that was unfortunate. He does have Jamaican ancestry, so I suppose that makes him able to play for Jamaica. I would rather have seen him play for the ICC America side. He certainly strengthens the batting lineup of that side, and he can bowl as well. He can even keep wicket if he wants to. He's a very, very all round player. Whether they would have won either of the two games we've played so far as they're recording this with him, I don't know, but I think they would have put up perhaps more of a fight than they have, especially in the second game against Barbados, that's where they were bundled out for just 103.
Yeah, it also raises an interesting question of whether his long-term future will be in Jamaica and potentially the West Indies, given that he obviously is leaning that way.
Yeah, you're on why blaming? Why not escape the bit of mess that is US cricket to for the slightly less bit of a mess that is West Indian cricket? It's a bit out of the frying pan and into the fire, but you can't really blame players for taking these opportunities.
Jumping into the news, Andrew, there was only two little stories that crossed my radar in the last month or so. One was the ICC had a global development annual planning meeting where it appears that they had a number of buzzwords as the outcome of the meeting.
Buzzwords are an annoyance of mine, but you have my sort of opinion on all this is you can have all the development you want, but if you don't have that shop window I talked about earlier, then what good does it do? There's no point having the factory floor without the without the display to put these teams on display. And when you have your 10 team World Cup and your World 2020 that's got a first round that is basically another qualifier and which to some extent gets ignored. Why have this development and not have the result of the development? So, but that's not that's not the ICC's fault. It's not the ICC staff fault. It's the fault of those people who make the decisions for the ICC at senior level, which are the full member boards. And it's an unfortunate truth that the development, as good as it might be, as whatever great practices they have in, they're sharing best practice from other sports and all those good terms that they like to use. But if there's no shop window, then what's the use?
One of the things they did look at is talking about investing wisely and looking at new markets. So it'll be interesting to see how that translates, whether that actually does mean more money into particular places or whether it's just a way of saying that they're continuing to do what they've been doing for a number of years in terms of investing in the nations that are doing well and that they favour to do particularly well, such as the USA.
Yeah, that's always been a bit of an annoyance of mine. I think you're probably going to get a good cricket market out of a team like, out of a country like Ireland, quicker than you probably are out of a country like the USA. Long term, maybe, the USA are going to produce, but that's really long term, where Ireland's on the cusp of becoming a good cricket market, whereas the USA is quite away from becoming a good cricket market, especially with what might be going on there at the moment.
Yeah, and I think part of that comes down to the bigger the market, the harder it is to get a foothold in the national media because of the size of the market and the size of the existing cricket in there. So a reasonably decent size in a small market can get on the front page and say, look at this, we're one of the emerging teams in the world in this particular sport, and that is enough to get attention.
Yeah, and your attention gets leads to sponsorship, leads to TV deals, etc., etc. Cricket is shown on TV in the US, mostly on subscription channels. Obviously, the Big Bash League was broadcast on NBC Sport, the NBC Sports Channel, which is quite widely available. So there is progress about getting cricket on TV in the US, but it's a big market with a lot of competition, and it's going to be hard work. Whereas Ireland, there are other sports, but Ireland have a team good enough that they can break through onto in the Irish market. And whether that's the case with the USA, I think remains to be seen.
Speaking of Ireland and Irish cricketers, we'll turn to her next assignment soon, but we mentioned in our review that Kim Garth was the player that stood out for us of the women last year, and she's done particularly well at the start of this year. She's taken advantage of an injury to Elise Perry, which are big shoes to fill in the Sydney Sixers squad, and played six games, took six wickets at 22, and in the side that eventually went on and won the final. So a really great opportunity and achievement for her.
Yeah, there's always a bit of a worry for me that these associate rookies, it's a bit of a sort of tokenistic thing, but obviously it isn't. Kim Garth took advantage of that opportunity and was picked for the pick for the side and has done very well, and I think opened a few eyeballs to, you know, the potential that your perhaps associate players can have. And you know, see an associate women's player playing professionally, you say any women's player playing professionally is great, but you know, an associate women's player is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and of course, this is a league that is now, as you say, it's professional. It's also broadcast on national television and gets crowds of thousands of people. So it's a big step up from a dozen people in a side field in Ireland to the opening match in a double header for a final of a pretty big tournament.
Quite the step up, and but you know, she wasn't overawed by the occasion and played well.
The next assignment, which I mentioned, will be the Women's One Day International Qualifiers. And this is going to be a pretty interesting tournament. It's a 10-team tournament because of the nature of women's cricket now that the top four teams have qualified already through the Women's Cricket League. And now they've been joined by the associate teams in this tournament, two groups of five, and then a Super 6 with four qualifiers going through to the World Cup, which will be played in the middle of the year in England. Starting with Group A, this is Ireland's group. They're with Thailand, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka and India. With three teams going through the Super 6, they would probably almost be favourites in that group to come third and therefore make through the Super 6, you think?
I'd go for that. Your Ireland have had a good year last year, so you know, they've actually started to beat some full members as well. They played very well against South Africa and Bangladesh, who were, although obviously they're in the other group, but yeah, I think you would bet back Ireland to come through there. I don't think Thailand or Zimbabwe are anywhere near the sort of side of Ireland are. I hope Thailand do well. I hope Thailand can finish maybe fourth in that group and ahead of Zimbabwe. That would be, you know, a good message to that associate cricket can be stronger than these, you know, full members. You mentioned it was a 10-team tournament. Looking at the ICC preview, you would think it was only a 4-team tournament because only four teams were basically mentioned in that press release. The other 16 just got an offhand mention that they were playing. I think it was. You know, it's quite obvious that there's four teams in this tournament that the ICC favour more than the others.
The Group B, the two teams the ICC favours will be the South Africa and Pakistan. They'll be joined by Bangladesh, PNG and Scotland. In terms of the associates getting through, obviously they need to beat Bangladesh. It'll be interesting to see who gets up over PNG and Scotland. PNG made a big leap last year in terms of how they played in the East Asia Pacific qualifiers, and if that carries through, they'd have to think that maybe there'd be an outside chance of nabbing that last Super 6 spot.
Yeah, you know, and you know, South Africa and Bangladesh, as I just said, have lost to Ireland in 2016, so you know, they are vulnerable. So, you know, who knows? You know, if one of those teams can just pull off a win against one of those, against South Africa or Bangladesh, then you know they have a chance at getting through to that Super 6 stage. Whether they can, you know, qualify for the whole tournament, I don't know. I don't think so, but. It's shaping up to be quite an interesting group, I think, if Papua New Guinea Papua New Guinea or Scotland, yeah, can turn over one of the full members in there. You'd expect, Pakistan to sort of, go through the tournament unbeaten, but even Pakistan, they are capable of messing things up. Both their men and their women, so you know, who knows what could happen here.
And in terms of qualifying for the tournament, the nature of this tournament means it's maybe not as hard to qualify as in other tournaments. It can be. If it's a 10-team group or a large group, you need to beat a few teams to get through. But in this case, if they can get through into the Super 6, even if it was with two losses against the existing teams, they might only need to beat the bottom team in the other group and then get one upset against the other two teams, and that might be sufficient to get through the World Cup.
Yeah, and you know, your Ireland have played in the last couple of Women's World Cups, so you know, they will be confident that they can do that. And you know, we've got a good chance of an associate qualifying for a small World Cup, an 18 World Cup in this case, ahead of full members, and you know, we'd like to see that as well as in the women's tournament, but in the men's tournament as well, I think.
The other tournament that's coming up will be the World Cricket League Division 5 qualifier for East Asia Pacific, which is, I think last year when we spoke to Tim Anderson, he was talking about how we might be able to get, might see more 50 over cricket now that they've reduced the World Cricket League. And this, if this is the result of that, then it's a good thing because this is a six-team one-day international tournament played by Vanuatu, Fiji, Samoa, Japan, Indonesia and the Philippines, being played in Bendigo in Australia in a couple of weeks. So it's a pretty interesting lineup of teams, and with one of the, it's a fair bit broadened as well in terms of getting into that World Cricket League structure.
Yeah, you know, we see often that the teams that don't play much 50 over cricket struggle once they play in the World Cricket League. That was certainly the case in Division 5 last year. So yeah, getting some experience of 50 over cricket can only help, and you know, I'm delighted to see 50 over cricket return regionally. I think there's one a tournament planned in Asia in March and one planned in Europe I think in July or August. So yeah, it's just, you know, fantastic to see teams get a chance to play in some 50 over cricket, and you know, it's something that we've been talking about on this podcast, I think almost since we started, that we want more regional 50 over cricket, and you know, we've got it now, so yeah, fantastic.
There's a couple of teams missing. You know, I guess you can't have every team in a tournament in a region in a tournament that's 50 overs, but Cook Islands and South Korea, a little bit surprising and perhaps disappointing, particularly for South Korea not to be there.
Yeah, you both played in tournaments. I've played in tournaments in the last couple of years. Cook Islands in the Pacific Games in 2015, and South Korea in that tournament that was that involved Hong Kong, Japan, and China. So it's not as if these teams are inactive. Quite why are they not playing? You know, South Korea missed the last T20 tournament the East Asia Pacific ran as well, so which is very unfortunate. But as you say, you can't have every team in a tournament. And maybe hopefully we'll see them play in a T20 tournament if there is going to be another World T20 in 2018. And then there will be a regional qualifier, and those teams will get a chance to play in that.
Yeah, I think the optimal structure for this would be to have, and as we talked about before, having sub-regional tournaments. So therefore, depending on how Japan goes, perhaps Japan and South Korea could play a two-game playoff to see which of those teams goes through this tournament. Similarly, Cook Islands and one on the bottom, Pacific Nations and Indonesia and the Philippines, the same. And just to make sure that they have that opportunity to progress, even though it's not to travel really long distances. Not that there's short distances in the Pacific Ocean.
No, and yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, we've often talked about sub-regional tournaments on this podcast, and this would have been an ideal thing to do for this tournament.
In terms of winners, Vanuatu will obviously go in as pretty strong favourites, but given their performance in the under-19s, the Fiji's shaping up as the definite challenger, and both Samoa and Japan potentially outside chances.
Yeah, I think you'd only really say Indonesia and Philippines are the long shots. Vanuatu definitely favours, but certainly those are the three teams, Fiji, Japan, Samoa, have a chance at knocking Vanuatu off, and yeah, it'd be interesting to watch.
Finally, there's a renewal of the iCup and the World Cricket League in Hong Kong at Mission Road Ground, with Hong Kong playing the Netherlands. It'd be a couple of interesting matches there in the iCup. The Netherlands can stay in that race to win the tournament. If they win, they're a little bit behind, but this is if they do want to have that opportunity, this is a match they absolutely have to win.
It certainly is. Yeah, obviously, it's looking like Ireland and Afghanistan are running away with the Intercontinental Cup, but if Netherlands can get that win, then it just puts a little spanner in the works potentially for Ireland and Afghanistan. If the Netherlands could win this game, then Ireland beat Afghanistan, then that puts the Netherlands ahead of Afghanistan, and then if the Netherlands can carry on winning, then maybe it's them getting into this proposed 12 team test structure rather than Afghanistan, although the ICC, you know, could also just ignore the results of the Intercontinental Cup, which, you know, wouldn't be the first time they'd done that, and just put Afghanistan in anyway, even if they finished below the Netherlands. So, yeah, certainly Netherlands can make themselves a good case, but, you know, Hong Kong, I think, would want to, you know, play well as well. You know, they've, you know, they had their last home game, the Intercontinental Cup, I think, completely washed out. So, you know, they want to, you know, do well on home soil and have a, you know, a full game on home soil as well.
Yeah, and well, Cricket League Championship, it's second playing third, so there's an opportunity for either of those two sides to go top of the table if they win both, or even possibly, I think they'll go top if they win one each. But probably more importantly, to put that gap into fourth place and fifth, put a gap into the fifth place team, which is currently Kenya, who are lurking a little bit uncomfortably at the bottom in that, just outside that top four.
Yeah, you know, the last thing Kenya would want would be for these two games to be split. You know, if they, I think they want one team to actually win both, because that keeps them a bit more in the hunt. So yeah, you know, these games are being live streamed, I believe as well. I don't think it's quite confirmed, but I think that, you know, Hong Kong are quite confident that will happen. So you know, that's good. That's good to see. And yeah, I think these will be two very, you know, close games. As we mentioned, the Desert C20 review, we're looking at two inconsistent teams, and sometimes matches between two inconsistent teams turn out to be quite exciting matches.
Yeah, sometimes they really don't too.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, what happens with inconsistency, I suppose.
And that's all for a relatively short podcast to start the year. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Russ, as always.